1212, ladies and gentlemen, this is the latest episode of the Preach Jacobs podcast. I'm your host, Preach Jacobs, and we are sponsored by Soul House at Coker Center for the Arts. We're also distributed by Big Media LLC. Thank you guys for putting this fabulous product out there. And we're also sponsored by Tussie. We have another guest in the building right now. He was a part of the first series. Do it from the side. See this? Yeah, right there. Yeah. That's the best place to do it. Okay. Right. Yeah, yeah. He was at the Soul House Sessions, the first conversation series that we had, first episode, I should say. We had Nikki Finney as a speaker, and this young man was the visual artist for the event, as we try to have a speaker and an artist for every event. We have Pienza Art Company's own Dre Lopez. What's going on, man?
What's going on, man? Happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you for pulling up, man. Last night, I don't know when this episode is going to come out, but last night was really, really inspirational in the sense of seeing Nikki Finney get her flowers figuratively and literally, where we have this whole forum, and Nikki Finney, who is a civil rights activist, a poet, a professor here in Columbia, South Carolina, just really speak plainly in a way that kind of like a call to arms for the creatives out here. Mm-hmm. And I think the Coker Center is going to get me the audio and we can put this out. My question is going to be, on top of how her conversation impacted you, one of the things that we did, you had this amazing series that was called The Dead Ones, where it was these pieces of these artists that you admire that have since passed. So we have Nipsey Hussle, we have Amy Winehouse, we have Frida, we have Marvin Gaye, we have MF Doom. And you ended up getting a piece, doing a piece for Nikki Finney, and it looks absolutely amazing. And to kind of further that conversation of, let's not just highlight the people that are gone, but let's highlight the people that are still here, that are the legends that are here. Yeah. So tell us about your inspiration that you received from being at the event last night, and tell us about how did you respond to how she responded to the piece that you did for her.
Okay. You know, we've done different shows before where they are poignant. There's always a vibe. There's always good energy within our collaborations from before. So in the least, I had that same expectation of, this is going to be a good event. People are going to share enough good energy within what we're doing. So, this will be good. When the show happened, as it developed, the energy that Nikki took was very much, you know, one of the first things that she said was, this is not, like, I'm not going to handle this like entertainment.
Yeah, this ain't entertain. Yeah, I ain't here to entertain you.
I'm not here to entertain you. So she took it in a very personal, introspective way of a lot of the stuff that's happening now, and a lot of how she sees things, how she's dealing with things, and how she feels that people should respond to. And it was an intense ordeal, because she was so raw, she was so personable. You know, I had a conversation with her at the beginning of the show, before the show started, and we talked a little bit about our mindset within some of the things that she was delving into within the show, and she delved into it in such an amazing way that, you know, it hit me. It definitely hit majority of the crowd, if not everybody. I talked to enough people at the end of the show, and they were so moved and touched in such a real way.
Yeah, and I think that what's really dope is, it's funny, right? I had this conversation the other day, and it's like, all the stuff that I like to do with the work that I do, I want to always, I say, honor the ancestors, right? And until they become ancestors, I want to honor the elders. And I looked around, And it's like my parents are now the elders of my family.
Right.
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 And now I am the generation that used to be my parents, because my parents are the oldest people in the family.
Right.
When it comes to this motherfucking art scene in Colombia,
yeah,
I'm like, oh, you know, there's opportunities to respect the elders, like the Nickies. But in some regards, people are looking like us as we're the elders. Right. So how does that happen where when Nicky, one of the things she said was like, look, man, she told this amazing story about this artist, this African woman that passed away that was working with this organization. Yeah. She was from Switzerland. And she was talking about in Swiss culture, everything is bank related. Everything is money related.
Yeah.
And she said, this woman said, you know what? This doesn't speak to my heart. I don't care about a profit.
Yeah.
Right. And as much as I believe and lean into, if we're artists, let's figure out a way to speak our truths and be artists first and foremost. How do you figure that balance out of being an artist, trying not to worry about finances, but be like, fuck it, I got to figure out finances.
I mean, I think that times have changed a bit, where a lot of the stuff that she touched on within this this part of the conversation and in this specific context is where, because of the political, like social political minute that we're living in, we have to think as creators about what we're doing in a more personal, more pointed way. And, you know, as creatives that are continuing to try to make a living doing this thing, but also being true to what our calling has been within creating art, creating whatever it is that we do, I think a lot of what I took from the conversation definitely had to do with understanding our place in time, where we have to do more towards the actual social political conversation.
Yeah.
Like the profit thing, like we still have to make a living, so we have to be aware to a degree. But at the same time, we are in a place that artists of all kinds, you know, visual artists, poets, songwriters, singers, producers, movie makers, whatever, writers, our calling all of a sudden is shifting a little bit more towards how we're affecting what's happening around us.
Yeah,
you know, it's difficult to balance some of that, as in my experience as a brown male, as a black male in the South, be professional and get people to like want to do these things with you on a professional level, while at the same time not selling yourself out, while at the same time still having a voice that is responsible to the community that we're in the middle of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we are, like you said, you know, like we're not the elders.
Yeah.
But we have been doing this for long enough that a lot of the younger people, creatives or just black and brown people, that might be looking towards us to have some of these same voices growing in it. So, you know, I can't say that I know the exact formula.
Yeah, yeah.
But it has become a lot more apparent to me that because the times are what they are, the shift towards being more socially responsible to your community needs to be a heavier thing within how I do things.
Absolutely. I think I don't think you need to trade being artistic to also speaking out against social issues and things that's going on. And speaking of which, for people that enjoyed the conversation that we had at the Koga Center for the Arts with our Soul House Sessions episode 1 with Nicky Finney, Andre Lopez, we have the next date that is going to be September the 10th, and we're going to have Chef Amethyst Ganaway, an artist to be determined. We're working on some fly shit, so we'll keep you posting on that. But the tickets are available right now on KogaCenterForTheArts.com. You can follow me on all the Instagrams and social media stuff to find that as well. Also, I want to say a shout out to a sponsor for the podcast and also a sponsor for these events. Shout out to Miss Ledbetter, as she is a participant with Curated Wine Group out of Charleston. And every time we do one of these conversations in the podcast, they're going to provide us with some spurts to get things vibing. So shout out to what they donated to Dre yesterday as the artist, the Kaya. Did I say that right?
You said that right.
Look at that, man.
Look at that, man.
Look at that. I can read, motherfucker. Kaya Tequila Blanco. It is each bottle is individually hand-blown glass made from recycled Mexican Coke bottles by local artists. So, let's figure this out. Let's see what this tastes like. So we're going to be sipping this throughout the course of the show. And shout out to Aaron Ledbetter for being the sponsor for that. All right. Artist-wise, and okay. I know I've known you for a long time, so sometimes it's difficult to like figure out the questions that I think the people don't know you want to know about.
Okay.
Here's how I'll apply it to what you do as a visual artist. I have this pet peeve with people that I know that listen to music and brag about their playlists on Spotify or Apple Music. Because people are like, oh, I love music. I listen to music all the time, all this shit.
Right, right.
That's cool. But if somebody that work in record stores and somebody that's a musician that makes music, I'm always trying to tell the community, if you really want to support a musician, just streaming their songs don't mean shit.
Yeah.
You need to buy something that they're selling.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
What is the visual artist equivalency of that, where people think they're supporting you in some regard, but they're not doing what the artist needs them to do?
It's the same idea. It's the same idea where you need to buy some of the physical product that's being created. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like with musicians and rappers and producers and all that, you know, you put out records, and it's like if you buy independently, it supports the artists. Mm-hmm. You know, the streaming shit, you know, like that formula has already been talked about, where pennies, fractions of pennies on the dollar for whatever amount of streams don't do shit for the artists. You know, like they're using us to take money.
Mm-hmm.
As a visual artist, you know, it's like if you're creating paintings, if you're creating illustrations for graphic novels, if you're setting up shows that have to do with like sketches and studies, whatever. The point being, supporting the artist directly is the best way to actually support the artist directly. You know what I'm saying?
Like, absolutely, absolutely.
It matters. You know, we've had I don't know how many shows in Colombia for so many years, and one of the biggest complaints we've had throughout is the idea that, like, you know, people come out to support you, in essence, but then they don't buy the work.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, yo, I love seeing people come out. I love seeing people just be there. But at a certain point, if you're not putting money in the pockets of the artist, you're not actually helping the artist. You just sit in there for a circle jerk. You know what I'm saying?
You know what? And I think this opens it up a little bit deeper, right? Because to me, I'm more concerned with the conversation of this, right? It's not just the issue of people not buying the art.
Right.
I get frustrated when people can afford the art.
Yeah.
And then they try to be assholes to the artist. Example, I'm not going to say his name, but, you know, we had that conversation where, you know, when the galleries open on Lincoln Street, old buddy, this guy that comes into the gallery, older white gentleman, has, you know, the money because he has a business that he just sold, and he's bragging about this business that he sold.
Right.
And it got to the point where he's like talking to me, and he's just basically like, hey, man, I'm working for this event that's out of town, and we want to have like a gift bag. And with the gift bag, we want to have stickers in the gift bag.
Right,
and
right.
I really love this artwork that Dre did, because you had a painting in there
okay.
that he was a fan of, and reasonably priced, right?
Sure.
Where I'm like, he's the guy that's bragging about selling his business, always bragging about his money. You can afford this. And he's just like, what would it take for us to get this image on Dre's painting and put it on these stickers for this event? And I say to him, well, I don't know how he would feel about that. And as his art agent, I think he'd be really happy if you just bought his piece.
For sure.
Then he says to me, well, if I buy it, I can do what I want with it. And I'm like,
that's not how it works.
And I'm like, nah, nigga, you can't. But I ain't say nothing because I'm kind of like, let me see where you go with this.
Yeah, yeah.
And he saw I wasn't budging with this. And somehow, some way, the guy kind of got an attitude with me about it. And I'm like, yo, dog, like, you wouldn't be doing what you're doing selling a business if you did shit like this for free.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And I'm not speaking on this dude's pockets, but the business that he sold, and his older guy saying he retired, whatever, whatever, I think he can afford a piece of artwork that's $1,200 to $1,500.
I mean, a lot of, in my experience doing this for several years, a lot of the people that come out to these shows,
mm-hmm.
not most of them, but a lot of them can afford to buy pieces. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's never been where the majority of artworks, original artworks especially, are being sold at ridiculous prices. You know what I'm saying? Like, everything has always been within reason. But then whenever it comes time to have these conversations, it always ends up being on some list of excuses, even especially from the people that can fucking afford it. And then those are the ones that also, if they're coming in from their own end, trying to take advantage, because that's what it is, trying to take advantage of the artist, it's always downplaying what the money pay is supposed to be versus the idea of all these other benefits of exposure or, you know, like just within what you said about this other guy, it's like, let's be real. Even if you buy the artwork, we also have to talk about licensing, because now you're thinking about grabbing something that I did as an original.
Absolutely.
And you want to slap it on your product. Absolutely. And it's like, no, no, no. That don't mean that you can just buy the fucking thing and then all of a sudden say, I'm going to do whatever with it. Like, that's not how it works. Like, there's such a low respect for creators that have not gotten to this, like, highest echelon.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only time that people don't even say shit like this.
Yeah. Well, this is where, and this is why the talk with Nikki and I last night was so amazing, is, you know, we talk about Toni Morrison a bunch. And Toni Morrison, when she talked about the white gaze, where it's basically, and you can interchange it, right? Because the white gaze is basically her saying that black creatives and black artists, they do work worried about what white people think about it.
Right.
And the white gaze is an author. She said it's writing a book, having people think that the person reading the book is a white person. So there's a bunch of shit that you're explaining that you wouldn't have to explain to a black or brown person.
Yeah.
I say that thought is interchangeable, because I think sometimes that as creatives here, there's this ideal of appealing to the people that have the money or the people that have the resources, which always aren't the people that support the artistic community the most. And I think that, because what happened with this guy that came to me with this shit is that he acted like he was mad at me. And I'm like,
of course.
No, like, how could you, even if you are upset, how could you disagree with the business acumen? Because you wouldn't do this, right?
But the idea is literally in those moments is the reaction of, wait. I'm the one that's telling you that I'm going to give you something. You're just an artist. Yeah. I'm doing you a favor. Oh, how dare you talk about this?
It's more than that. I don't think the currency he believes is exposure. I think that's code word for white proximity.
It's sure. Like, yeah. Yeah. That's
I'm going to have you around some white shit. Isn't that what you think is success?
Right.
Isn't that what you think is how you've like crossed over, like the whole terminology crossed over, right? And we was talking about this yesterday with Nikki, and I joke about this with Miles Davis. If you look at Miles Davis, there was an album about by Miles. I forgot the name of which album it was, but they had a record where it was like, let me find it. they had a record, Miles Ahead, his album, Miles Ahead. Mm. They had the original copy of the record, had a white woman on a sailboat.
Okay.
And he was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
And the label was like, oh, crossover, blah, 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 blah,
right.
blah.
Right.
And he was like, fuck that. He said, my wife is beautiful. Put my wife on a cover. So there were many times in Miles Davis's career, he put his wife on a cover, his wives on a cover, black women, beautiful black women. He had his first wife, Frances, was on One Day My Prince Will Come, ESP. His other wife, Betty Davis, is on a few album covers. He ended up marrying Cicely Tyson. She was on the album Sorcerer. But the point of him saying is, yo, man, why would you, as a black man that got a black wife, why are you going to put some white woman on here thinking that somehow I'm going to sell more records if they see a white woman on the cover?
Yeah.
And so what I think ends up happening is like people thinking like, oh, I got to be near this or in proximity of this to be successful. And I heard you talking earlier today when we was hanging around here that there's this challenge of, as a creative, you haven't had time to do shit that you want because you're constantly, if we're talking about money,
yeah,
doing stuff that other people are asking you to do.
Yeah.
If someone said, here's a check, what creative art endeavor would you want to do right now?
I think as a creative, at a certain point, maybe it could be early, maybe it will be later, you come to understand that a lot of your highest premium that you put out is your brain, mm-hmm. is your very specific sort of creative thought process, mm-hmm. you know? And having worked as a professional illustrator, professional graphic designer, done, you know, fine art as well, whenever you're creating other people's work, it's a contract of my skill with your vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is fine. That's all good. Like, I'm still creating. I still get satisfaction out of that to a certain degree, and I get paid, right? Yeah. Hopefully, you get paid the right amount of money, which is also another conversation. If you end up spending, which this is my case, you spend so much time creating other people's vision, your vision is not being put out there because you don't have any time for that shit.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a creative, a professional creative, as a freelancer, as your own company, whatever, you are taking contracts to pay bills,
mm-hmm.
and if you're working for yourself, it's a 7 day a week thing, working yeah. long hours, so you don't have time to devote to your craft for yourself. You don't have time to practice. You don't have time to do it for fun. And you sure as fuck don't have time to create your own works, again, off of like your own personality, brain, creativity to put out there. And within the conversation we were having earlier, off the podcast, it was about, you know, for me, I've done this long enough that I have found this itch growing larger and larger where I have the necessity to create things that are my vision.
Absolutely.
You know, and I'm objective. And again, I still get satisfaction out of just creating, but I am in a place where it's that much more important for me to know that I am leaving works behind. You know, mm-hmm. I saw. I think honestly, it was like two different creatives that I follow on social media. Where one of them, I believe the post has something to do where it's not verbatim, but the post he put up had to do with, you know, you're gonna die at a certain point,
mm-hmm.
but your artwork is gonna live beyond you.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you're creating, whatever you're putting out, somebody at some point is going to find it and feel some sort of thing that transcends. You know, maybe it inspires them. Maybe it makes them think about something. Maybe they feel love. Maybe they feel hate, anger, whatever. But that work that you're putting out that comes from the deepest part of your within is what's going to continue to touch souls before, after you're gone.
So what, where's that urgency sit with you now as far as like being able to create something that you really want to have like as a legacy for your family to be like, yo, Dre did this shit?
It's at a 9 or a 10, period. You know what I mean? Like the struggle is trying to find a balance of, you know, how to make money, how to pay bills, how to survive, and still be able to create your own thing. That said, the necessity for me is exactly up there. 9 or 10, where literally it is about legacy. It is about, you know, you're leaving something behind that can influence somebody in some sort of way. And that is the power of art. And that is the power of what we're supposed to be doing in the now. Mm-hmm. And then what we're supposed to be doing so truthfully that even in the later, when we're, you know, it's been years of us ceasing to exist, somebody else, especially in this day and age of the internet, man, they can find that work somewhere and still be affected in a way that is just like, yo, now I got to think about this in a different way. I mean, you know, like that show last night with Nikki.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it affected me as a creative, like her as a creative speaking about things the way that she was. It was just like, yo, now is my responsibility, because I felt it to my soul. I got to think about shit in different ways, even though I'm very aware and proactive about, you know, being in touch with those things and trying to make those changes as it goes. But this is how art touches souls at different times when it's needed, especially at times like some of the shit that we're living through right now, where voices are trying to be quieted.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean?
Yeah. I'm wondering this, right? One of the things that Nikki and I talked about, and I was really deliberate about this last night, right? Like I didn't, you know the inside stories about what I went through to get out of my space on Lincoln Street.
Yeah.
I didn't want to spend that time in that space with a sold out crowd focusing on, you know, all the bad shit that was done to me.
Yeah.
I was more, all right, nigga, what's next? And so there's a part of me, is a part of me that's thinking, as much as we can speak about the mistreatment of how the community treats artists here.
Yeah.
And how the community at times, and maybe it's not even the community, maybe it's the people with the money, or maybe it's government, whatever.
Right.
For all the stuff that we think is wrong, and we can find those commentary all over the place. What's right about Columbia? What's right about the Columbia's creative scene that you love and embrace?
I think the people that choose to create here, the people that choose to keep doing it here, are genuine, real, raw people. They are committed to a place that has been problematic, especially for Black and brown creatives, Black and brown people, period. And also where, because of the construct of what this place is, it always feels like there's a lack of a lot of the things that we're trying to fill. You know what I'm saying? And this place is full of people that believe in that shit, believe in that void, believe in that voice, believe in the fact that the potential has always been there. You know, it is like living here as a creative, living here as a Black or brown creative, you're always on the underdog setting. And there's always a beauty about the underdog fighting to create a space to belong, to get over, to get past. these obstacles, these Goliaths, these giants, whatever, you know, like it matters. And I think that this place, for the amount of time that I lived here, this is my most direct experience has to do with creatives. That is one of the most beautiful things that I have experienced. And that is one of the things that actually has always kept me here, because I've always attached myself to that.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought of like, yo, you know, like I've never been about like big fish, little pond type of thing. Whoever fucks with that, whoever makes the most of that, no hate. But for me, it's always been more about like, there is a void that needs to be filled, and I want to be a part of something. And being here in Colombia, experiencing so many years, so many people that believe it, that are passionate, that a lot of them are brilliant within what they do.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it easier for me to be like, yo, I'm not alone with this shit. And if they're seeing something, how I might be seeing something,
mm-hmm.
then this is all worth it.
So what's the thing that you want to do artistically right now? Like, what's the thing that's on your wish list as an artist?
You know, if I can figure out timing, if I can figure out finances and all that, I think that I definitely want to have a couple of art shows, mm-hmm. of my work, you know, whether, you know, the easiest, shortest thought has to do with this Dead One series, you know, these yeah. portraits. I do enjoy doing them. I mean, obviously there's so many creatives that have affected me that I can be inspired by. But there's also a couple of other thoughts I have to create fine art shows. There's a couple of creator-owned properties I want to do as graphic novels,
mm-hmm.
that also potentially could become animation projects. I have a clothing line, an apparel line that, you know, COVID kind of disrupted, because that's kind of when I dropped it, and then it you know, COVID kind of disrupted everybody's fucking process.
Absolutely. Once again, this is the Preach Jacobs podcast, and I'm Preach Jacobs. You're listening to Dre Lopez talking about his work, and we just did the first installment of the Soul House Sessions. Speaking of Soul House Sessions, the second one is going to be September the 10th, and we're going to have Amethyst Ganaway. So go to the website, CogarCenterForTheArts.com, to get your motherfucking tickets. One of the things that I thought was really, really important was going over to the Coger Center and having that as the art space, them embracing the programming. And right. one of the programs that we did at Soul House on Lincoln Street that I really, really love was when we did Old Snap. Tell us about that concept, and I think we're going to try to do this again in the very near future.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what we're talking about, and that's a thought. Oh Snap was an idea between my brother and I, Sammy Lopez. You know, we're PNSA Art Company. The idea was to create a pop-up market that's accessible for young or older creatives that have works that are cheaper, that are easily accessible to the community, you know, both between black and brown, where a lot of times in the art scene, in the fine art scene especially, is difficult to buy artwork,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying, because it's always priced out of normal people's budgets.
Mm-hmm.
Oh Snap was an idea to allow for creatives that are doing dope work, that want to connect with the community, and that they want to sell things that are at a good price point and an accessible price point.
Mm-hmm.
And within the idea of the market thing, it was also to like dress down what a fine arts gallery is supposed to be.
Yeah, yeah. The people turning their noses onto, you know, Prince, because not Prince as in Purple Rain, but Prince, right? Where it's like you know, you have people that are snobs. It's like, oh, if it's not an original, I don't want it. But that's how I got into investing in artwork. Like, that's how I got into being able to get something on my walls. I deserve to have shit on my walls as much as the person that has a bunch of money. So I think, oh, snap, in the times that we've done it for you guys to curate this vibe of local and regional artists to be a part of the vending process, and there's music and there's like refreshments, but like there's an opportunity to kind of like really, really get a chance to meet artists that are selling work, doing work. And it's also, I think it's important between, you know, with you and your brothers, like y'all the ones that pick the artists that come out for it. And I think that when people trust y'all's taste, that's a big part of why people want to support. Like, all right, I fuck with Pienza. If you say this person deserves to be here, we're going to give them a shot. And I think that's a big part of what needs to be done with the artists and their platforms in the community.
Yeah. I mean, I'm grateful for that because, you know, as long as we've been doing shit together, a lot of the emphasis has always been on, no matter how accessible, no matter, you know, the amount of people that can fit in a space, big or small, it's, yo, we're giving you quality work.
Absolutely.
Period. You know, like the shit that we're doing, the people that we're collaborating with, it needs to always vibe of that same mindset of high quality, you know, and not high quality in an inaccessible way.
Yeah.
High quality in a way that is just like, yo, it's us, you know, like the old snap pop ups literally have been like really close to the ethos of the DIY shit. You know, DIY to me has always been hip hop community, punk community, skateboard community, you know, like all of that is literally like, it's just little old us doing things for the rest of us. So that we can all share in this thing, you know, and I think that matters within how a lot of things are shifting nowadays. You know, like I've literally been seeing and reading a couple articles within the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, that the fine art structure of the big gallery, the big fancy galleries, you know, all over the world and shit that represent all these artists, and it's like millions of dollars per piece and blah, blah, blah. That shit is dying.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of the smaller independent galleries and the pop-ups and the markets and all of that have deconstructed and destroyed a lot of that previous structure, because people want to collect art, people want to support the communities, you know what I'm saying? So like being able to tap into that, that ethos of literally the cultures that I grew up out of,
it's
everything, because it's what's mattering now, as you know, not to get super political in this shit, but the idea of the separation of classes within how some of us are not these motherfucking billionaires and millionaires and all that shit, we also still are the ones that are driving this, and it's important to create these spaces.
I would love to be 100 air right now, and I think what you're saying is really hilarious, because it's like you would see people with the money investing in these artists and like, oh, this person comes from the gutter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. You know, I always call it the Basquiat and Warhol theory, where it's just like, you know, did Basquiat need the cosign of this old weird white guy to make sure he amplifies his work?
Right.
And we had conversations about your Basquiat thoughts, but we're going to get into it. But I think we talked long enough, man. Fuck it. We've been drinking and speaking, and shout out once again to our sponsors for the podcast. We have Curated Wine Group with the Calleja Tequila Blanco. We've been drinking it on the rocks, and it's been really fucking fantastic.
Delicious.
Each bottle is individually hand-blown glass made from recycled Mexican Coke bottles by local artists. And say that word for me.
What word? Guadalajara.
That's right. That's where this motherfucking tequila came from, because I wasn't about to fuck that up. But anyways... All right.
Phonetics, motherfucker. Phonetics.
Yeah, I wasn't going to read slow on this podcast. I'm already blind and there's no light in here. Anyways, this is what happens when you shoot in your house or recording your house. Tell the people where they can find you if they want to stalk you on socials and all that good stuff.
The socials, primarily Infidel underscore Castro underscore X. That's where I put a lot of my stuff. You know, if you're on Facebook, it's just Dre Lopez. And also PNCR Company. PNCR Company is also on Instagram. We've been low key on those socials recently, but that's because we're just preparing a whole bunch of shit. So we're planning on being more active within the next, you know, 6 months or so.
All right, fuck it, we got some shit to do. And once again, for you guys that came out to the first Soul House sessions at the Coca Center, it was a treat with Nikki Finney and Dre Lopez's artwork. Check out all the socials. You'll see that in there. And I think we're going to get these pieces back in the Soul House Gallery. So it's going to be on the third floor, Soul House Gallery. Also going to have some stuff on the columns on the first floor. So please, please, please check and support the art and the artists for Soul House Art Gallery at the Coca Center. And speaking of at the Coca Center, we're going to have the next volume of the Soul House Session, September the 6th, where I'm speaking to Amethyst Ganaway, chef extraordinaire, journalist, and all around great vibe of a person. This is the Pre-Shakeups Podcast. Thank you guys for listening. Y'all can follow me, Pre-Shakeups, on all social medias. Stalk me, send me money, call my mama. I don't know. We'll talk to you soon. We're going to drink the tequila. Fuck you. Peace. You're-
The preceding podcast is solely owned by its host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2025, all rights reserved.